B2B marketing teams rely on eMarketer media solutions to elevate their thought leadership and build meaningful relationships through exclusive webinars, guides, infographics, and more. Visit eMarketer.com/advertise to learn more about our proven approach. Hello, listeners. Today is Wednesday, July 17th. Welcome to Behind the Numbers, Reimagining Retail, an eMarketer podcast. This is the show where we talk about how retail collides with every part of our lives. I'm your host, Sarah Lebo. Today's episode topic is the rise of commerce media and who should be introducing media networks. Before we jump into that, let's meet today's guests. Joining me for today's episode, we have Principal Analyst Sarah Marzano. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And also with us, first time on the Retail Pod, we have Senior Analyst Maria Elm. Hi, Maria.
Hello.
Welcome over from our financial desk side of the biz. Happy to have you.
Happy to be here.
Okay, let's jump in. We talk a lot about retail media, which is retailers launching their own ad networks, in case you haven't listened to every episode of this podcast. We talk less about everyone else who is doing this. This is your PayPals, your Ubers, your Marriotts, JP Morgan Chase's, to name a few. These are non-retailers or non-strictly retailer media networks that have been bucketed together as commerce media networks. So, Sarah, big task. Can you explain what commerce media is?
I can try. So I think what is so interesting about commerce media is that because it's a relatively nascent concept, it's sort of come with kind of an amorphous and frankly contestable definition. So depending on who you're talking to, you may get a different interpretation. For us, commerce media is really looking at advertising that leverages first-party purchase-based data. It's powered by the company who owns that data and that relationship with the customer and whose core business is not media. Mm-hmm. So beyond retail, who arguably sort of inspired and kicked off the commerce media trend, the verticals that we're seeing enter the space are financial services, travel companies, and what I refer to as commerce intermediaries, which is kind of a mouthful. So if anyone has a more an easier way to get that to roll off the tongue, who behave a lot like retailers. So think companies from Instacart to Uber Eats to DoorDash, but are inherently really different from retailers themselves in some key ways. And as you mentioned, the past 12 months, we've seen a flurry of activity from entrants outside of the retail sector, which is why we're having this conversation today.
Okay, so you said they are different from retail media. I think the obvious way retail media networks are different is that they involve selling goods, selling retail products. How else is commerce media different from retail media?
I thought a lot about how to sort of approach this, and I think the best place to start is actually to talk about how they're the same before we get into some of the nuances and differences. So I think the one common attribute that knits all of these verticals together, the non-negotiable, if you will, is having that first party commerce or transaction data that is informing the targeting for these advertisements. The second piece is having ad inventory, and I would argue that that needs to start on owned and operated properties. So think a website or an app, or increasingly getting into the physical sort of realm. If you look at the practices of an Uber or a United Airlines, we're looking at digital screens that exist on seat backs. And then that is paired back to the traffic that or the audience that is going to be viewing those advertisements on those properties. And then we're going to get into anything from the scale to the frequency of that traffic to the intent and behavior of that audience, because those are the things that are going to inform kind of the value proposition to the potential advertisers. So I think those are the pieces that I wanted to kind of mention that sort of knit all of this together to put it under that umbrella of commerce media.
Okay, so we're talking about like a million different things here, right? Like United putting an ad on a seat back is way different than Chase giving me a deal in an app, which does bring me to you, Maria, to talk about financial services. So Sarah's brought up how valuable first-party data is in all of this. Who has more first-party data than our financial services and payments companies? You just put out a report on financial media networks. Can you talk about some of the advantages these companies have?
I think the biggest advantage they have is just breadth. So like unlike a retail media network, they capture the entire spending history that a customer has. They issue credit cards. They can see not just like one place you shopped at, they can see everywhere you ever shopped at. So definitely just breadth. And then like if you slice and dice financial institutions into payments and banks, the payments companies like a PayPal, for example, they also have access to more granular, like itemized SKU level data. That means that they don't just know that you spend, you know, $50 somewhere. They know exactly what you spend those $50 on. And depending on, you know, the type of transaction, they even know, like, if you returned something or if you kept it.
Mm-hmm.
Just that, like, deep granularity. But again, I think major advantage just comes down to breadth.
That sounds really valuable as an advertiser and really scary as a consumer, because I don't know if I want my advertisers able to see what's happening in my Venmo.
It is all pretty dystopian, but, you know, just roll with it. See where it goes.
Yeah, they're going to know that I like paid like $50 for haircut emoji and start giving me ads for haircut emoji.
Yep, probably.
I think when we tap into the nuances that exist within verticals, we get into your original question for me, Sarah, which I avoided answering directly, which is where do the differences kind of lie among these commerce media networks? And I think financial institutions are sort of a great example. To Maria's point, they are able to provide a more holistic view of the customer by providing cross-merchant spending behavior. And I think one of the things that inherently changes as well is the pool of advertisers who are going to be interested in reaching audiences. So when you think about something like a Chase offer, we're talking about the retailers themselves that might be interested in advertising to consumers, right? Maybe you want to target someone who Chase knows shops at your competitor pretty frequently. Right? So that opens up a really unique opportunity to the retailers themselves. But then again, when we think about the fact that Chase isn't likely to have access to granular SKU or brand level data, that makes the offering potentially less appealing to those brand advertisers that are such big spenders with retail media networks.
So Colgate might be buying an ad with Walmart. Walmart might be buying an ad with Chase. What I'm getting at is we might see Colgate buying that ad with Walmart and serving it somehow through Chase. Like
what a tangled web we weave.
Yes.
And we haven't even gotten into this, but we have to think about sort of, I hinted at the audience behavior, but like, what do you open your Chase app to do, and how compelling does that Colgate offer need to be, right, in order to get you to take action?
Yeah. Well, so Amazon right now owns like 75% of retail media spend in the US. I spend time on my Amazon app and I'm like barely an Amazon shopper. So like, I get where that's going. I get where those ads are going. And I also watch Amazon shows. Amazon has my time and my eyeballs is what I'm saying. Chase does not have my time and my eyeballs. And even when they do have my attention, I'm not opening my banking app to spend money. I'm opening my banking app to get anxious about money. So like, where are these ads going to go for these financial media networks?
That's a really great point. And I think like if there's going to be a big stumbling block for these things getting off the ground, it's going to be exactly what you just described. But that said, like a bit of a tangent, but if you look at something like social commerce, mm-hmm. like when it was first starting up, there was a lot of skepticism and uncertainty around, you know, like people go on Facebook to chat with their friends, right? To connect with people. They don't use it to click on an ad and buy a jacket. We've seen that change. So incremental tweaks to consumer behavior over time are possible. It'll probably take a lot of investment from Chase and everyone else in the financial services industry to make that kind of change happen. But it's not impossible. And if you look like at a player like Klarna, who I think are the pioneers of financial media networks, they completely pivoted. They started as a buy now, pay later. Nowadays, they're pretty well established as a shopping browsing app. I think small tweaks over time will happen, because mm-hmm. banks must be aware of this problem. And I think they have strategy in place for that.
Yeah, so what you're saying is that a year from now, I'm going to see articles about like the TikTokification of the Bank of America app.
Maybe not quite that sensational, but I do think that that they're going to start pivoting, because especially like if the interest rate environment stays how it is, banks are going to be like chasing revenue anywhere they can find it. So they're really going to try and make this work.
PayPal does have Venmo, which does kind of work like a social media app. So it's like not that
essentially
crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I love when people don't have their Venmo private and I can kind of stalk.
Gotta make your Venmo private.
Yeah. But I think you touched on something really important, which is that what you're doing when you open the Chase app, that consumer, that audience mindset, I think there is an opportunity there for Chase or any bank to really think through, like, what is then going to be really valuable to my users, right? If I'm worried about money and spending and savings, then arguably the right targeted offer that feels really relevant to my behavior mm-hmm. stands a chance at being received by me in a really positive mm-hmm. way, right? So I think that's sort of the task at hand is, again, how can you put your consumer first and think through what's going to be really relevant for them? And that's not a new concept in advertising, right? How do you break through the noise and create an offer that is really engaging and relevant enough to hopefully ensure that the consumer doesn't mind seeing it?
Just to build on that, I think like, so right now, all of the financial media networks I'm aware of, they're only using spending data, but I don't think that's the end game here. Banks have other products and other data they can tap into. I think what we're going to see over the next year, maybe even, is like them drawing on data like, did you take out a mortgage? How much do you have in your investment account? Did you take out a home improvement loan?
Yeah.
I think they have so many opportunities there. Because like if they can let an advertiser know that you took out a mortgage or a home improvement loan, they're going to know that you're going to be interested in like homewares, DIY products. That opens up so many new opportunities and just better targeting capabilities. So I think that's where this is going.
Yeah, it's a really good time to understand all the buckets of data that all of these companies have.
For sure.
Okay, so we're talking about companies that are already launching commerce media networks. There are a lot of companies that haven't launched them. They might like do commerce media, but they haven't launched it in this really like marketing themselves way, like buy ads with us. I tasked both of you before this with telling me a company or multiple companies that you think should or will launch a commerce media network in the next year. Maria, who did you have in mind?
So top of mind for me are two in particular, and that's Capital One and Citi.
Okay.
And I just think that's because their profiles are just perfect for doing something like this. If you look at Chase is, I think, the biggest credit card issuer in the States, or at least biggest bank credit card issuer. Citi and Capital One make up that trio.
Mm-hmm.
They're the three biggest issuers. So they have that trove of customer spending data to leverage already. Second, the three of them, they're just enormous. So they have a massive physical and digital footprint to draw data from.
Yeah.
And third, if you look at someone like Chase, their financial media network is built on top of an existing rewards program, and that's Chase Offers.
Mm-hmm.
Citi and Capital One both also have rewards programs that are really similar to that. And I think that just serves as like a really natural springboard for building a financial media network on top of. So I think they'll take some time and see how this plays out for Chase. And if they see that, you know, it's driving sales for advertisers and it's bringing in ad revenue for Chase, then I think we'll see these two guys make their move.
It's occurring to me as you say this, that the same way we have like social media creators, like the points guys, like people who are creators for getting the best deals through points on credit cards, as they launch media networks, we might see another like genre of creator that is getting the best deals through these like rewards ads that you're being served.
I think that's a good call. I think so. Yeah.
Sarah, who did you have in mind for launching a media network?
Yeah, so you alluded to this already, but I expect that a lot of the announcements that we are going to see in the coming months are going to be from entities who aren't actually strangers to advertising, but maybe they're overhauling the way they leverage the first party data they have access to enhance those targeting capabilities. So it's not necessarily going to be about ads appearing in places where they've never appeared before. But at my most optimistic, it should be about consumers seeing ads that are more relevant and targeted to their interests. We haven't talked a lot about the travel industry, but there's been some very interesting activity here. Everyone from Expedia, who announced the launch of their commerce media network in May, which I would argue is like a solid example of someone who has been running advertising for quite some time, but is revamping the way they go about it. And then we also have United Airlines, who launched their connective media network based on their customers' commerce data. And we're talking about using the seatbacks or the app as the platform to serve up those advertisements. I expect that we'll see other airlines follow suit. Delta comes to mind. And if you look back at some of the news that's come out about Delta over the past few years, you can see them kind of putting the building blocks in place for this. So last year, they started rolling out free Wi-Fi on their planes in partnership with T-Mobile, but you have to sign up for their loyalty program in order to access that Wi-Fi. That is a super compelling offer for anyone who's ever been sitting on an airplane, bored out of their mind. Mm-hmm. I will give my email address to anyone who asks if I can get online to pass the time there. And they're already kind of rolling out new ad experiences on seatbacks and passenger devices. Their initial partners are interesting. American Express, which runs their credit card, and Resy, who is owned by American Express. So,
and that's not really like higher wealth shopper as well.
Yes. Yes, that's a great point and potentially a good value proposition for Delta to bring to market. So I expect that we'll see a formal announcement there. And then I expect that a lot of the interesting stuff that is going to evolve within the space is going to take place in partnerships and thinking through how niche players can leverage their data in partnership with other entities in order to broaden their scale.
Yeah, I mean, with travel, it's interesting because you don't have the same granular data that financial services or payments companies have, but you do have a really clear understanding of where your consumer is and what they might be doing. And if they booked their flight recently, then they're probably, I don't know, in a more like business or like they're probably not going on vacation. If they book their flight further out, there's more room to serve them those sort of experience ads. And then you also like literally have a captive audience. Like when I am on the airplane, I am captive to staring at the seat back for the next several hours. And that can create a really dystopian experience if you're serving me ads that I just like don't want to see for 7 hours. That sounds awful. But if you are in some way creating relationships with streaming companies or with your own like streaming platform and then serving me programmatic ads because I've given you my email, because I'll give you anything because I'm captive to this seat, then you can start giving me really targeted ads for who I am, where I'm going to be, and what I might be doing.
Yeah, and Delta does have a partnership with Paramount Plus, I believe it is. So I think that's certainly already happening. But you hit on something interesting is that anytime you kind of double click into any of these new verticals that are entering the space, it's really apparent how much nuance there is, right? A United or a Delta operates really differently than a Marriott or an Expedia, right? In terms of inherently who the advertisers might be, the activity that the customer is engaging in, the behavior there, the potential for closing the loop. And then you could argue that even the Ubers and the Lyfts, who exist kind of in that commerce intermediary bucket and have their hands in sort of many of the verticals that are involved here, fall into the travel space as well, right? They know where you're going and when you're going there. And they have digital properties on offer as well, right? I don't remember the numbers offhand, but both Uber and Lyft have information about how often riders will glance down at the app during a ride or while they're waiting for it there. So it gets even more interesting as you zoom in on the verticals at play here.
Well, and it's not just riders. I mean, I'm mad at Uber for this, but they are taking advantage of push notifications in a way that could really benefit advertisers and is also destroying my iPhone lock screen as I'm just hanging out. But because they know where I am and what I'm doing and if it's raining in my area and if I tend to order takeout on Tuesday nights because that's when I have a workout class and I'm too tired to cook, then they can give me really targeted ads. And they are doing that. And it is working.
I think that's the key, is making sure that the ad or it feels relevant enough that you don't mind being disrupted. And I think that's where a lot of these companies are going to have to make sure that they're threading that needle of not disrupting the experience for their consumer when it comes to the core business that they need to kind of incentivize, but also ensure that they are putting the advertisements in front of someone in the right time, the right place.
I'm putting you both on the spot, giving you each 30 seconds. What is one thing that advertisers should be looking out for as commerce media networks evolve? Sarah, I'm going to you first.
I think that advertisers are going to be encountering a whole slew of hard sells as more and more entities enter the quote-unquote commerce media space. I think what really needs to happen is just a calm and careful evaluation of the value proposition that's on offer and a realistic expectation of what each commerce media network can deliver.
Maria, you're up.
I'd say that the biggest thing that advertisers should be on the lookout when it comes to financial media networks specifically is how regulators are responding. Because like the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is like notoriously draconian at the moment. And I'm not saying that's not without good reason, but like, I think if you're an advertiser, think about things like, is the financial media network, like giving customers the option to opt out of having their data used to target ads, or is it getting them to explicitly opt in? Because like, an opt-in mechanism is definitely going to go some way towards reassuring regulators. In terms of like consumer privacy violations. Mm-hmm. And also like, I think both Chase and PayPal have a model where they only charge their advertisers if a customer actually like acts on an ad or a deal. So that helps with things like attribution and tracking return on ad spend. So if you have an option, you know, whether you're being charged up front or you're being charged after the fact, if someone acts on a deal, then I'd say like always opt for the latter model, because that just makes more sense.
If you guys opened your banking app and you were served a question of do you want to be sharing your data with advertisers for a better experience, would either of you say yes? I wouldn't.
I'm not sure. I think, but maybe this is just because like I'm an analyst covering the banking industry, so I'm not the typical consumer. Mm-hmm. I think I might just do it to see how it is. I mean, like, I know that I can always opt out again, right?
Yep.
But I think I'd be curious. But again, I don't know. Don't know how many people the sentiment applies to. So,
yeah, I feel like I just assume that my data is being used every which way. So I'm pretty lenient about that kind of thing. So, yeah, sure, sign me up.
Yeah,
give me a coupon I want to use.
If I had to press more than one button to opt out, not a chance. I'm opting out.
Absolutely not. Yeah, type something. Not doing it.
All right. Well, thank you both for being here. As I put you on the spot, thank you, Sarah.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Great. Sarah will definitely be coming back on the podcast. Thank
I've
you,
been
Maria.
Brat on the podcast lately.
It's Brat Summer. Thank you, Maria.
Thank you. This is so much fun.
Thank you to our listeners and to Victoria, who edits the podcast and is a vital part of my media network. We'll be back next Wednesday with another episode of Reimagining Retail and eMarketer Podcast. And tomorrow, join Marcus for another episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily.